Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, Toasters. Welcome along. Oh, thanks for listening. You're the best. So I'm keeping it very low energy at the beginning because it's currently, 20 minutes past 10 on Tuesday night, and I've just finished editing the podcast. I've only just finished, which for me is very late. It's very unprofessional. And my wife and kids are asleep in the room next door. Long story. And if I talk too loud, I'll wake them up and then they will all kill me like sleepless zombies. What a way to go. So I'm being very quiet and very apologetic to you for doing this so last minute and slapdash. However, I'm thrilled you're there. Thank you very much. It's a great episode this week. You're going to enjoy it. A bit of business. The Adam Buxton episode is currently up on Patreon, patreon.com/toasterpod. So if you want to have a listen to that, then get stuck in. I've got to say a big thank you to Howell, my mate Howell, who I saw this week. He's a fellow dad. Our kids play football together. And he said, "Tom, I love your podcast. I'm never going to pay a penny for it." Top man. Absolute top man. Thanks, Hal. So thanks for that support. If you, however, don't want to be like Hal and you want to give us £3, that's right, £3. That's the low grade. That's the low entry fee for a little bit of Toaster advanced episodes. Then jump onto patreon.com/toasterpod and you can get the Adam Buxton episode waiting for you now. In the meantime, enjoy Philippa Perry. As you're about to hear, this was a slightly different vibe because she screen shared. So she was kind of in control. And that just made it a wonderful roller coaster. And she's more easily distractible than me. And that's saying something. So enjoy that. Enjoy the episode. Thanks for listening. And see you soon. Bye. So I'm going to look in the camera for this. Because when I'm looking at you, actually, my eyeline's there when I'm looking at you.
Oh, okay.
So it looks like I'm not. But that is me looking deep into your eyes instead of that.
Yeah, you've got to look at the camera. I'll look at the camera too, which means I can't see anything except for a little black dot on my computer. There. Is that spooky too?
Oh yeah, it's quite. No, that's fine. You look like you're looking. Yeah, you're looking right at me. Yeah, that's uncomfortable.
Okay,
yeah,
uncomfortable. Yeah, I'll look at. I'll look at you again instead.
I have got the very brilliant Philippa Perry with me today. Philippa, thank you for coming on My Mate Bought a Toaster.
I'm so brilliant. It's taken me 20 minutes to remember my Amazon password.
And we're on a Zoom this week, so I can see you, which means I've just had the most amazing TV show, which is Philippa Perry having a password breakdown. Yeah. Commission it. At once, the swearing, the despair, you started panicking about me needing to go and do things. I'm a podcaster. I've got nothing else to do but this. This is all I want to do. No need to panic at all. So look, and the other way we're doing it today, which is the first time we've done this, and I think this is a game changer. Philippa is sharing her screen with me on Zoom. So I'm going to direct you in, Philippa, right? So what you need to do, you've opened up your orders, and I can see your latest order, which we will get to eventually. But what we're going to do now...
I've got the wrong glasses on. Sorry. There we go.
Okay.
I can see now.
Oh, but you're not quite as Philippa Perry now.
Yeah, but these are my reading glasses. Come on.
Okay. All right, fine. So this, you're like Clark Kent compared to Superman now. All right, so Clark, what I'd like you to do is where it says 32 orders placed in the past 3 months, if you click on the little drop down there, and you're going to see all the years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Scroll down, 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 please. Let's go back into the mists of time. Come on, all the way back. 07, please. Yes, thank you very much.
What?
Indeed. So here we are in 2007. You made 87 orders. Scroll down on this page for me, please. And
I just bought books then, didn't I?
Yes. Well, that's what we all did on Amazon. That's what we all did when Amazon was just like a sort of slightly innocent tax-paying bookshop.
But the thing is, that's my book. Nobody else in my family had an Amazon account. So if anybody wanted a book, they'd get it through me, and I would pay for it.
Yeah, that's the problem. You become the Amazon mule.
Yeah, and then I got things like medical school interviews, a practical guide to get you to that place. I go, that is not for me. I didn't want to go to medical school.
Well, who was it for then?
Well, my daughter thought she wanted to be a doctor at one point.
Yeah.
So I said, before you go to medical school, don't you think you should just follow a doctor about?
Yes.
And so she followed my friend, who's a cardiac surgeon. And she said, Mum, I don't want to be a doctor. And that was just after one day.
Really?
She said, I love the surgery. I love the science. But God, he had to speak to people and they were horrible. She hated the relations of the patient that blamed him because the patient was getting better, but not as quick as they hoped.
Oh, really? God. This is the problem,
isn't
it?
That put her off being a doctor.
If you're a doctor, you know, patients believe they have a sort of client-provider relationship with doctors, and they're just, you know, very impatient. And I'd be like, Ryan, if I was a doctor, I'd be like, fuck you then. See you later. Forget about it.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. He was really nice. That's what Flo wanted to do, but he was really nice, my friend, the doctor.
It's a very good way. Anyway, very good way to crush kids' dreams with working things, just to send them and experience that job for a day.
Shadow someone for a bit. Mm. Mm. She shadowed a GP, and that was disgusting, apparently. Quite a lot of genital warts. She'd had enough by then.
Right, here's what we need to do, please. Go to 9 along the bottom here, and you can see, we're then going to be able to see your first ever thing you bought on Amazon. So we're back in 2007, and then scroll down now, because it starts
from the bottom. Oh, Step Into the Stone Age. I love that book.
Well, let's talk about that then. Let's dive into
that. Now, wait a minute. Let's see the first thing I ever bought.
So, ooh,
wait a minute.
Here we go. That's it.
Here you go.
So 15th of January, 2007, you bought Attachment, Trauma and Multiplicity, Working with Disassociative Identity Disorder. A great read.
I did.
A paperback top 10 bestseller, surely.
No, it's by a friend of mine, Valerie Sinison, and she's really good on dissociative identity disorder, which used to be called multiple personality disorder. And I had a few clients with this, and I learned to specialize in it. And I had special sessions with Valerie Sinison, who's an expert in it, who helped me. Mm. And I bought her book. And dissociative identity disorder. It's when you're really traumatized, so much so that you can't be who you are, so you go into another personality and you are that person.
So is it a different personality?
And you don't know it when you're in it.
Or do you literally call yourself like Keith and actually I'm a bus driver and a completely different person? Or is that an extreme cartoonized version of it?
It can go like that. It can go like that. You can swap gender and everything.
And have you seen it happen right in front of you where people just flip from one to the other?
They usually dissociate into sort of catatonic silence.
Okay.
Sort of like just sort of zone out. That's dissociation. And then you can dissociate and then have a different sort of personality when you come back.
Wow. This sort of stuff really scares me. You know that? It really scares me because when I was growing up, my mum used to, I might as well get some free therapy. My mum used to go on about, because we've got a history of mental illness in my family, and she used to say all sorts of things about her mother going to the funny farm. She always talked about the funny farm. That was her phrase. And I was really scared of it. And I've still got this sort of thing in the back of my head based on what I grew up listening to, that madness was only just around the corner. This weird sort of...
It is only just around the corner. The brain.
This is the
thing. Brain is such a delicate organ.
Yeah.
You know, and just have a little bit of trauma somewhere to the brain and you can recognise everybody except for your significant others, things like that. God, it's a very delicate organ.
Yeah, okay.
You have a little stroke somewhere in your brain and you can't use your left-hand side of your body, or you can't remember what happened between 2012 and 2017 or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's weird.
Mind you,
it's weird. But the great thing about the brain is that it's plastic, and if you damage a bit, what happens is the neurons find another circuit around the damaged area. So you do get better. You can get better.
And that's why things like therapy are worthwhile, obviously, because you can develop it and get better.
Yeah, because the brain is plastic. I can always work with a brain.
Okay, good. All right.
Plastic. Give me brains. A brain. I will work with it.
Already fascinating. Okay, good.
Oh, look, we've got another textbook on dissociative identity disorder. Yeah. You can tell I've read them all from what I'm saying. Yeah. Now, the other thing that absolutely fascinates me is prehistory. So we've got a lot of blood on prehistory. A lot of books on prehistory, like the blood of the Isles here.
Homo
Britannicus, the incredible story of human life in Britain.
Right.
Art, Time and Technology, Culture Machine. Oh God, that's by Charlie Gear. He's a friend of mine. He's an academic.
Right.
And he writes such clever books, I cannot understand them. I mean, his sentences are like a whole book long. Sorry, Charlie, but honestly, that was just too much for me. I only read the first chapter. I'm really sorry.
The worst thing is when you get a book, this is what I found at university, when you get a book where you're reading a textbook and you don't understand it, the more you read it, the less comprehensible it gets. It's not like, I'll just have another go and I'll have another go. And you sort of slip into this fugue state where none of it's making any sense anymore.
Yeah, fugue state. Mm. That's another part of dissociative identity disorder. Oh. Well done. No wonder you remembered that.
Yes, yes.
Look at this one. After the Ice, A Global Human History.
Right.
This is like my hobby of 2007 all coming to life.
I love it.
All prehistory. And the other thing about this, you can't fake it, can you?
No. This is the thing. This is the point. We're finding out the true you. Exactly, exactly.
Well, how about this? Hunter-gatherers in history, archaeology and anthropology.
Fascinating stuff.
You see, the thing is about this subject is that human beings don't change much. And as you know, I'm very interested in psychology, as we've seen from the dissociative identity textbooks. Mm. And human beings don't alter all that much. Our culture alters enormously, but our actual physical brains don't alter. How we react to trauma doesn't alter.
Yeah, yeah.
And so all we can do is become more aware of it and take a meta perspective of it, which is why I love all these textbooks, because I link it up with what I know about psychology.
Mm. And do you think that mental health problems, you know, when they happened however many thousand years ago, 15, 20,000 years ago, do you think they existed in the same way? Were we too busy just trying to survive
the
day?
No, I don't think they did, because prehistory, you probably did about 30 to 40,000 steps a day.
Yeah.
And you had to work quite hard gathering berries and finding tubers. And sometimes people went off to hunt, but it wasn't that successful, you know, because they hadn't domesticated animals by then. So you had to sort of be on your feet all day gathering all these things. And that's quite good for depression, having so much exercise. The other thing is, I've got friends that have been really, really depressed, and I've been depressed from time to time as well, and you just can't get out of bed. You cannot get out of bed. You're so depressed. Yeah. If you couldn't get out of your nest when you're in the Stone Age thing, you would die. Mm. So people might have died from depression, but they probably didn't live with it.
Yeah. Yeah,
because if you couldn't be asked to go hunting and gathering and people got fed up of looking after you, you'd probably die.
That's a good incentive to not get depression.
So you probably wouldn't have so much depression in the Stone Age because you'd be dead.
Yeah. Step into the Stone Age. There we are, 11th of February, 2007. That's more, is that a sort of for a kid's kind of textbook type vibe?
Oh, there? I like everything. So so here you've got an academic book, and then here you've got the kiddie book.
Yes.
So I like to read both.
Yes.
I like, because my job is to take academic tomes from psychology and psychotherapy and psychoanalysis and put them into pop psychology so people can get the wisdom from them and learn from them. Because they're brilliant, brilliant books, but they're written in very, very long sentences, so nobody would read them. Yeah. So I'm very interested in that when I'm looking at another subject, like when I'm looking archaeology. I want to read the academic stuff, but I also want to read the pop stuff.
Yeah.
That's just what I do.
And that's the approach you took, obviously, with the book you wish your parents had read, which is that your most recent publication?
It's my most recent book, yes.
Okay.
And all the facts in the book are sort of academically researched, but who wants Harvard referencing in a book you want to actually use and apply?
Totally. No footnotes, thanks. I don't want footnotes.
No.
I just want
very few footnotes in that book.
Quite right. I want academia, the best bits.
You want academia with not too many long words.
Yes.
That's what I do. Because I actually struggle. I'm dyslexic.
Okay.
And I have to work really hard at these academic books to get them in. And so I don't want anybody else to have to do that. So I think that's why I'm quite good at pop psychology. So I can dilute it into something digestible.
Yeah. Okay, all right, good. Well, you're digesting absolutely loads of books in 2007. Let's skip on ahead. Come on, Philippa, let's jump on ahead. So go up to 2007 there. Go to the top
of
this page.
Go to the top, yeah.
Go to 2007. Let's skip on a year or two. Come on, let's jump on ahead. Let's go to...
See what I'm up to next.
Oh, look, you go right back. Hang on, Philippa. Whoa. You got 2001 back there? 2000s!
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Talking of the Stone Age, let's have a cheeky little click on there. Let's just have a little jump into there. So this is 21 years ago in 2000, two orders placed, and there's two books.
Oh,
so,
God, I'm still on personality disorders.
Yeah.
In Search of the Real Self, Unmasking the Personality Disorders of Our Age.
But this is all your work. This is fine. I'd be concerned if it wasn't your work. You know, maybe there's something going on. cheeky little look at 2000. Fine. So let's get back on the timeline, please, Philippa.
Should we try to... I'm interested now. What's happened in 2003?
This week, you're in charge because it's your account and you're screen sharing with me. So I'm just watching you. What have you got in 2003? Tell me.
I seem to have bought some films.
Yeah.
I bought About Schmidt, Monsoon Wedding, and Life is Beautiful.
Oh, those are good movies.
Wow.
Yeah. £35 you spent on those. £35.
I know. Imagine that. Woof. Incredible. Where should we go now? What you can choose.
All right. I'm going to go for 2010, please. Take me to 2010. This is like being in charge of a time machine. I love it. And then once again, before you get distracted by the first thing
hello.
You see, which
look at this book.
So this was bought.
Do you know this? Are you familiar with this book?
This was bought at the end of the year. This is a DVD by Dick Kirby, is that right?
Yeah, it's called Sick, The Life and Death of a Supermasochist, Bob Flanagan.
Right, go on.
And it's really interesting because it shows the roots of sexual fetish.
Uh-huh.
Because Bob Flanagan had a terrible disease where his lungs didn't work properly, and he spent a lot of time in hospital when he was a child,
right,
being looked after by very loving nurses and doctors who stuck needles in him,
right,
who operated on him.
Yeah.
So he associated this pain with love,
right,
and he became a massive sexual masochist. And then he made that into art. So it's art, but it's basically masochism. And I recommend the DVD.
Wow. What kind of art? Give me any examples.
Performance art.
Performance art, right, okay.
Like he says at one point, he's got a girlfriend. He says, "You got me by the balls there. You got me by the balls." And then the camera pans out and he's actually been suspended by his testicles on some hooks. That's that sort of thing. It's great fun.
Great fun to watch. Wow. So is he very conscious of the reason that he's into that stuff? Is because
he's dead now, RIP.
Okay.
He had cystic fibrosis when you've got all that stuff in your lungs?
Yes.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's what he had.
Right.
He actually lived much longer than most people live with it. He lived well into his 40s, and you usually die in your 20s with that disease.
Yes.
So I reckon his sexual motivation kept him going.
Yeah. Okay.
God bless Bob Flanagan.
Amazing. I'd never heard of him before now. I'm fascinated.
God bless the perverts.
Yeah, always God bless the perverts. Oh, there's a tattoo right there.
Oh, God, I've bought my own book. Shit.
Yes, happens. It makes it even worse that it's a gift order as well. Look, December 2010, happy Christmas. You've bought... Well, to be honest, Philippa, we get this almost every week on My Mate Bought a Toaster.
What, people buying their own books?
People buying their own books. You've done it again. So
well, what people do is they talk to me and they say, "Oh, can I have a copy of your book?"
Mm.
And I go, "Sure." And rather than write to the publisher and say, "Please, can I have six copies of £6.50? It's easier to buy this at £12.07. That seems very expensive.
That's a
very expensive. Books.
This is couch fiction, this book. A graphic tale of psychotherapy.
Yes, it's actually just been reissued by Penguin.
Oh.
For a much, much more reasonable price.
Right, okay.
I don't know what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I sort of want to know a little bit about Couch Fiction, please. This is. I mean.
Okay. Couch Fiction is a graphic novel.
Yeah.
And it's a depiction of psychotherapy between a client and a therapist. The therapist is called Pat Phillips, and she's got a bob. And any, you know, if she looks like me, that's just sheer coincidence.
Complete chance. Yeah, sure.
And it shows you the process of psychotherapy from the client's point of view, from the therapist's point of view. And not only did you see from the speech bubbles what they say, you also see what they're thinking, and because of the way it's illustrating, you feel what they're feeling because of the way it's illustrated. I mean,
okay.
So it's a sort of three-layer graphic novel on that part, so you can see what's happening in all the layers, and graphic novel was the best way to show this. And underneath, and I know you don't like technical notes, you don't like the odd footnote,
I don't,
but underneath
hate
I've put all the theory, all the sort of psychoanalytic theory and the proof and everything like that, that's all written in footnotes, but it's done in a very amusing way.
They're funny footnotes.
I'm a very amusing person.
Well, of course you are. P.G. Woodhouse used to do hilarious footnotes. I love a funny footnote. But so very quickly, so the psychotherapy thing, slightly unfair to say very quickly, the psychoanalysis, how does that differ from something like CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, or just basic talking therapy? What's the kind of, you're going
okay.
deep, is that the thing?
There's as many types of psychotherapy as there are therapists, but there are some major brands like CBT, psychoanalysis, cognitive behavioral, as you said. What makes the biggest difference is the actual practitioner and the relationship you have with them.
Right.
So if you had, say, humanistic or gestalt therapy with someone in one country and you're moving to another country, you think, oh, that was great, I want some of that. And you go to another gestalt therapist, you think, my God, this guy's rubbish. That's not because his theories are rubbish, it's because you're not getting on with him.
It's all chemistry.
So what you need to make therapy work is a good working relationship with your therapist. And that's to do with them personally and you personally and the match. Finding a therapist is a bit between finding a doctor and a lover, because you've got to really like them in a way, or at least respect them.
Yeah, I had this a bit when I had a therapist and he was really nice, but it didn't really work. And he kept saying, you know, if you don't feel like, very early on he said, if you don't feel this is right, that's absolutely fine. I don't have a problem. And of course, out of guilt and awkwardness, I just sort of carried on.
Oh, that was what we call a paradoxical intervention.
One of those.
It's when you say the opposite of what you mean.
Yeah.
So when you say to someone, you'll never give up smoking, that's a paradoxical intervention, because they'll go, yes, I will.
Yeah,
so your
intervention
worked, you see.
Right. Okay.
So if you want to leave, then you can. Oh, he must be a good guy. I've got to stay. Shit, he's ineffectual.
Yes, that. Good. Okay, I'll keep an eye out for those. I do those a lot. All right, let's carry on. Now, what I'd like you to do, Philippa, scroll down to the bottom of this page, right? If you can dare to do it without getting distracted by the things you're going to see along the way.
Nice novel there. Sometimes I read novels. Look, there's a novel.
Yeah,
look, I'm starting to buy things on Amazon.
This is what happens. 2010 is when everyone starts to buy things on Amazon. We've got some nice wool tights here.
I'm very sensible and practical.
Red.
Wool merino tights.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah. Warm legs, that Philippa Perry. Warm legs.
Very warm legs.
Right, go to the bottom there. Cashmere socks. Lovely cashmere socks.
Okay, now what number do you want me to hit?
I want you to go all the way along to the bottom and pick number 10. Oh, here's a good one. So look, 17th of January, 2010. Couples, the truth.
I am a couples therapist.
Right.
You're not getting any dirt on my marriage, I'm afraid.
Is everything okay?
Everything's fine, and it was in 2010 as well.
Do you still do couples? This sounds like I'm not asking for business.
I'm doing it with siblings at the moment for my own podcast.
Ah, really?
Yeah, I'm doing siblings counselling. I'm really enjoying it.
And you're going to podcast the actual therapy session with your siblings?
Yeah, they get their sessions free.
Wow. Are they famous, or are they just normal humans?
No.
Good.
No. No, they're not famous. Well, they might be, but that's incidental. and I changed the names and disguised the sound a bit. And available on the Audible platform.
What's it called? Is it out now?
No, it's not out yet. Okay. The one I've got out now on Audible is called Families in Crisis.
Great.
It's quite scary and sad, actually. I don't even recommend it.
Okay.
Because I think it's too gloomy. It just makes you cry, honestly.
Oh, hello you. My name's Tom Price.
Hello, I'm Dave Cribb.
You should come and join us. Every day we do a podcast called Cabin Fever, where we talk to loads of comedians who've had to cancel everything else in their lives, so they come on our podcast instead, don't they, Dave?
Yeah, it's an isolation podcast.
Dave, were you yawning at the start of that sentence then? Was it just a little yawn?
Yeah, it's basically the Great Big Owl isolation podcast. We'll have people on from all our podcasts, from your Rule of Threes, your Brian Rogers, your Musicals, your Bitchins. If you like any of our podcasts, if you like any of those people, chances are they'll be logging onto the Zoom call and just chatting, because let's face it, they got nothing else to do.
Also, there'll be a quiz on the bill. All right, see you soon. Lots of love.
Cabin FE83709. Oh, 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 that's our Twitter name.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's take a random number from 2010. Let's just go to 5, right in the middle. Okay.
I'm really enjoying this, by the way.
How are you?
Yeah, because it's like a... You know, I'm finding out about myself and stuff.
Yeah, there you go. This is the idea. This is the idea. Okay, let's have a little scroll down then in 2010, see what else we can find.
Oh, this is such a good book.
Ooh.
Such a good book.
So this is
Catching Fire, yes. How Cooking Made Us Human. As you can see, I'm still on the prehistory thing.
Yes.
But this was about, like, when we learned how to make fire and we started cooking our food, we got more nutrients out of the food, and so we spent less time actually hunting and gathering, and then we had more time for leisuring and sort of building up more relationships. And this is according to Richard Wrangham, how our brains grew bigger than chimps' brains because we discovered fire.
Yes.
Which gave us a huge advantage.
Yes.
It's a very interesting book. I really recommend that one.
It's such a fascinating idea. So we stopped being kind of hand-to-mouth grazing constantly just to stay alive creatures, and we suddenly had a bit of time on our hands and bigger brains.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I remembered a thing that Alice Roberts did on the telly when she got, like, she tried to live off carrots, right? I think she went a bit orange. But when she didn't cook the carrots, she just had to spend all day eating carrots just to get enough calories.
Yes.
When she could cook the carrots, the starches turned to more efficient sugars, so she needed to eat less of them to get the same amount of nutrients.
Okay, there you go.
Brilliant.
It's all about...
Well done us.
Well done us. God, we've done well. But then equally, from celebrating humans, we've got the misanthropic Charlie Brooker, the hell of it all. Genius.
You've got to have a balance, haven't
yes.
you? You've got to have a balance.
Of course we have. Of course we have.
I love funny books. Oh, look, God, I bought my own book again.
Twice. Couch Fiction, A Graphic Tale of Psychotherapy.
I give them away. And so I need a supply of them.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with it. Oh, look, but £8.73, so it's gone up here. It was £6 last time you bought it.
Well, things just move about, you know, depending how popular they are.
All right, what have we got here?
Mad Travellers, Reflections on the Reality of Transient Mental Illnesses.
Explain, please. What does that mean?
I can't remember that book at all.
Okay.
I'm just hoping it's in my brain, but I have no memory. Maybe I bought it and didn't read it.
No.
Oops.
One of those. I'm sure that happens a lot. We all do that. Okay, let's keep scrolling down, please, Philippa. Let's see what else we can see here in 2010. Another copy of Couch Fiction, A Graphic Tale of Psychotherapy.
Shut
very good.
Up. Hang on.
Wait. 1 second. 22nd of June. Let's see how many copies you bought of that. 15. That's £144 worth.
Well, a lot of... You go and give a talk.
Yeah.
People want a book.
Fling them out.
And I buy it at whatever price it is, and then I sell it at the full price.
Yeah.
I'm not daft.
Okay,
it's
fine.
Easier than getting it from Palgrave Macmillan, who were my publishers at the time.
Fine.
Penguin, I have to say, are brilliant at giving me boxes of books.
Mm.
Thank you, Penguin.
Big shout out. Big love to the Penguin, of course.
Yeah, you'll
of
see course. When you get to my book, I haven't bought it at all because my current books, Penguin, give me all the copies.
There you go. Okay, fine. All right, let's move on from 2010. Go scroll up to the top. I think we've done 2010.
Look, I bought a Jo Brand DVD.
Oh, we love Jo Brand. That's Getting On. That's when she played a mental health nurse. Fantastic.
Yeah, that was a great thing. I loved it. Where are we going now?
We're gonna leap on ahead. Well, you choose. Let's keep going forward. So let's go for 2013, I reckon. 2013.
This is almost up to date. Oh, hello.
Well, I mean, as we get towards Christmas, there's two things I want in my life. One, bought on the 22nd of December, Strictly Bipolar, one of my favourite dancing competitions.
Strictly Bipolar by Darian Leader.
Yeah.
This is a book about bipolar disorder, which used to be called manic depression.
Mm.
And I made a documentary about bipolar disorder for Channel 4. So look at me. I do some research. Clever old me. Darian Leader is absolutely brilliant because he gave me this idea, this metaphor that someone who is feeling okay, it's because they're feeling connected and they're feeling connected to themselves.
Yeah.
To their environment, to other people, to ideas. And it's as though they've got little hooks on their body that can connect to other things. And he said, when you're depressed, you've got no hooks and you can't connect to anything.
Yes.
But when you're manic, you've got so many hooks and you're making so many connections that you've gone absolutely mad because you haven't got a thread running through, that there's all the connections going out at once. So isn't that brilliant?
That is
Thank
so
you,
good.
Darian Leader, for that.
That is so good.
It's something I've used a lot when explaining why people are feeling like they're feeling. And it's such a useful metaphor.
And
I got it from that book.
And both of those, whether you're connected to lots of hooks or not at all, like when you're connected to lots of hooks, equally you lose your sense of self, don't you? You've got so many different things going
yeah.
on, you don't have that core.
So that's when you're manic.
Mm. Mm.
It's when you, or ADHD a little bit.
Yeah.
It's when you're making so many connections that you lose, that you forget the number you first thought of, you know? So you can't finish anything.
Big nods happening here.
Or
Big
find
nods.
Your keys.
Yes. Yes.
I got you, haven't I? I got you.
Well, you can tell, you know why you've got me, because I don't know if you saw, I'm just started looking out the window because I'm trying to swerve away because it's
uncomfortable.
Extremely
got you on the seat. You lose your keys. You don't know where you're going. You're looking out of the window. I think you're doing this very well. And
thanks.
I think this is a great idea for a podcast. And I see I bought another one of my books.
Yeah, you did. Look,
it's really embarrassing.
Here we go. Come on, let's scroll down and find it. So How to Stay
there
Sane.
It is.
The School of Life by, it says here, Philippa Perry. She sounds like a great
yeah,
author.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
Yeah, she's good. She really knows her bean.
Yeah, yeah. How to Stay Sane. And now you can see how many books and how much anthropology I put into my work because
yeah.
you've seen it all and will tights, warm legs the whole time.
Warm legs yeah. and loads of books. Also, what I like about it, what is that image of? It's a sort of pink image on the front. Is that a bird on the front?
It's a bird flying. Because in the book I talk about, the graphic designer I don't think quite got it, but in the book I talk about we think we're individuals, but actually we're one of a flock.
Oh, nice.
And we all affect each other. And she sort of just put a single bird on the cover. I think, oh, for fuck's sake.
Okay.
Who am I to argue, you know?
What do you like then as a creative person? Because you are clearly a very creative person. When you're getting the feedback from your publisher and they're like, here's the cover. Do you dig your heels in and get snotty? Or do you just go, sure, take the easiest path? What sort of person are you?
Pitman battles, you know. Mm. I mean, that was part of a series and all of them had one blob thing on the
front. I see.
Rorschach
vibes there.
That's it.
Also, the reason I just thought it was quite interesting in a kind of associative way is that it looks a bit like the Twitter logo, and it's a perfect analogy for Twitter. You think you're an individual, but actually you're part of a flock. I'd say in a more negative way.
That's when, in that book, I think was, when was that published? 2012, I think that was published.
Yeah.
And I think that's when I got onto Twitter because my publisher said, go on Twitter and promote it. And I thought, well, that's a fucking waste of time because I haven't got any followers.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, this is my book. Will you read it, please? Thank you to one follower who's a bot.
Yeah.
But they had something because now, which was why it was so tragic when I lost my account the other day. Now I've got over 100,000 followers, which is very nice. Thank you very much.
Yes.
So now if I want to sell something, I have to say, don't buy this, you won't like it. Paradoxical intervention. And which was why I was so upset when somebody hacked into my Twitter and it was taken over. Oh,
yes, I know. I was very conscious of this when I was watching your Twitter over the last couple of days, thinking I've got to ask her if I can get into her Amazon account. How up for it is she going to be? It's quite traumatic when you get the old...
You're fine. Not up for it. I can hardly get into it myself.
Yeah, exactly. It's quite traumatic getting the old hackage, isn't it? It's not nice.
I've had two electric bicycles stolen in the past year. And that was a lot of money. That was probably £5,000 worth of bicycles stolen. And yet, when my Twitter, Instagram and email were lost to me, I felt so much worse. Even though I didn't actually lose any money because I've secured my bank account pretty damn quick.
Well done.
So I didn't lose any money. I've lost my work Instagram, but not my cat's Instagram. So I'm really pleased that Kevin Kitty Cat is still going strong on Instagram. But my book promotion has gone.
Yeah. Do you think...
I had 30,000 followers on that. I thought, 30,000 followers, I thought. Then I thought, oh, hang on, they're not dead. I haven't lost them as in they've died.
Yeah, it's not that sad. No,
so it's not that bad.
And also, don't you think that maybe, this might be some very glib psychology coming back at you here, but those, you realise your emails and your Instagram and your Twitter, those are the hooks attaching you to this person. And when those are released and you have the panic, isn't part of you like, I could just walk away from all of it? Don't you have a feeling if I'm going to become some sort of digital nomad?
No, because I'm really fond of Twitter. Mm. I like chatting to people.
Yes. You engage, don't you? You do engage with your
followers.
Yeah,
I do. I love the chat. Mm. And I've met some people. I've met some friends. And the other thing is you meet someone at a party. Do you remember those? We used to go to parties. Right. You meet somebody at a party and you think, they're nice. I'll follow them on Twitter and they'll follow me and we can carry on chatting.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And there is a case for the defense of social media for that sort of reason. The only problem is this just so bloody addictive. I wish it wasn't quite so addictive. Do you know what I mean?
I'm not that. I don't think I'm addicted to it, but I realize I think I've got my identity. Because I felt like I'd been stolen. I think my identity's caught up in it, which is probably not healthy.
Yes.
But now I've got it back, I feel fine again. So everything's
the
good.
Hooks are back on.
And I've got my cat's account.
That's the most important thing.
These strange things online, like books, weight sets, and posters. Come on, hear the best of the best of my mate.
Let's keep scrolling through 2013, Philippa. Go to the bottom of this page.
Look,
you could,
I bought all of Jane Austen on Kindle. I say that, but look how much I paid for it.
I know. 0.000.
That's right. Oh, look, here you go. Demedicalizing misery, psychiatry, psychology, and the human condition. Are you finding my book purchasing a bit one note?
I am. So, well, I mean, it's maybe one field, you know, of life, but there's so much to it. Like, there's so many different nooks and crannies that you can fall into with all this stuff. Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullets, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Illness in America. Like, it is endlessly fascinating.
Yeah, the more drugs they take, the worse the mental health crisis gets. I'm seeing a link there.
Yes.
Call me old-fashioned.
Yes.
Yeah, I recommend this book to absolutely everybody. It's easy to read. It's got all the science. Anatomy of an Epidemic, Magic Bullets, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Illness in America. Mm. Robert Whittaker. Read it, read it, read it. If you're depressed, read it.
Okay, okay.
If you're not depressed but might be in the future, read it.
Wow, this is the most ringing endorsement we've had so far on the episode, Philippa. This,
yeah.
Okay, so if there's one book...
It's an important book.
One, okay.
It's because so many psychiatric drugs don't cure depression. They just put a plaster on it. Mm. And actually, a bit like a plaster you put on a wound, at first it feels really nice and great. And that's when they do the research. Then after a while, if you don't take the plaster off, you're going to get gangrene.
Mm.
Well, if you get hooked on these drugs, you're going to need more and more and more of them to have the same effect.
Mm.
And I don't want to say anything that's going to get me sued because they've got more money than I have. But please read this book.
Okay, fine. All right, good.
You're going to cut that, aren't you?
I'm absolutely not going to cut that. No, I think that's really interesting. Right, okay. I think it's really interesting. I think that people get very defensive about medication and mental health. Johan Hari got into all sorts of trouble, didn't he, when he went on Twitter?
I don't know.
He's telling people not to take
it. I'm fond of him.
Well, he was saying to people, I had depression and I took tablets and it wasn't the answer. Horses for courses, everyone's got...
Oh, I see. Yeah. I'm glad he said that and not, it was the answer, I'm fine. Which it is for some people because it's a temporary thing anyway.
Yes.
And it might make it bearable. And I'm sure drugs do save lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. But dependence upon them is not great.
Yeah,
there's that's all, what I'm saying.
There always has to be an arc towards coming off them, doesn't there? That's the point.
I hope so.
Jane Austen, Northanger Abbey, again, getting it free on Kindle. Very nice. Can you scroll down for me, please? Let's dive into this. What have we got here? Oh, look, come on. Lovely stuff there here on the 28th of October 2013. Are you going to claim this as your daughter or are you going to take this one for yourself? China Glaze Metro Collection for fall. This is lots of nail lacquer here. Oh, look at the nails, Philip. Look at those nails. We are on a video call and Philip is showing me that's a beautiful blue. Is there a teal you've got there going on? What's going on? How did you get into... Because you were an artist, first of all, right? You went to art school. How did the psychotherapy thing happen?
I was an artist and... you know, when you make art, you're on your own all day. It's quite lonely.
Yeah.
And also, Radio 4 and Powdered Milk, that's what being an artist was like. Also, I've always been interested in psychology. I've always read very deeply around psychology. And I was just resisting being a therapist because I didn't think I could be.
Yeah.
And I dipped my toe in by working for a suicide helpline. And then I got some more training and then some more training. And then before I knew it, I'd done a counselling course. Then before I knew it, I'd done the first year of the psychotherapy course. And then the second, and then the third, and then the fourth, and then the fifth. So...
Then it's far too late. Then you're stuck.
Then you have to have clients. Otherwise, you can't progress and learn more. And you learn a lot you learn mostly from clients rather than from reading.
And do you think you're a better therapist now than you were? Do you feel like, oh, I wish I could go back and do those people again? I'd do a much better job.
Yeah, do a bit. I wish I could have the first five clients ever had. Come back. Come back. I'm all right now. I can do it now. Sorry, I practiced on you. Sorry about that. Yeah, I'd love that. Maybe the first 20 back again.
Yeah.
But if you're listening to this, I'm sorry, I haven't got any spaces. You can't come back. But you can meet me for coffee. That's fine.
Fine. All right. You can always tweet her. We know she likes Twitter. Let's go to 2020. Let's have a little look at Philippa Perry's lockdown, please. That's what I'd like to see. Oh, 145 orders in a year. Well played. Well played, Philippa. Really strong.
It's gone up, hasn't it?
It's gone up. Yeah. That's really noticeably gone up. We've got here, we start at the end of the year, as you always do when you navigate to this page on your purchase history. By the way, listeners, if you've ever never done this, do have a go and let us know what you discover. 31st of December, New Year's Eve, you bought some instant lighting fire logs. Oh, I love a log fire, please. Yes. Like if I can see on our video call, I can see the fireplace in the background. Is that what they're for?
This one, right.
Mm-hmm.
This is a gas fire.
Yeah, lovely. Oh, that always works well, chucking a log on a gas
downstairs
fire.
Downstairs is a real fire. Upstairs in my study, only got a gas fire because I'm supposed to work here, not just clean the fireplace. So.
They're quite high maintenance, aren't they, the fires?
Yeah, it's a lot of work, but I quite like that. But that's leisure. So here I've only got a gas fire in this room.
Right. Okay.
That sounds glamorous. Look at my gas fire.
Check out my gas fire. Ooh.
It's quite a fancy gas fire, really.
Look how far we've come. We've come from the chimps using fire to become humans. So now we've got a gas fire upstairs whilst podcasting. What a species we are. All right. Do me a favour again, Philippa. Scroll right
Lipstick.
Down. Oh, I mean, look. Scroll right down. No, right down. So, and then go to the beginning of the year. So 15, and we'll take us to the beginning. Here we go. So the beginning of 2020, we've got Elizabeth Strout Olive again. I've not read that. You've got an audio book.
Oh, I recommend that so much with all my heart. Such good books.
Okay, good. I know I've heard very good things about her. What have we got here? Drink the New Science of Alcohol and Your Health, bought at the beginning of the year. Is there some sort of significance to that?
I'm very fond of Professor David Nutt and I read everything he writes. I did a book program with him once and he just cuts through bullshit. He's brilliant.
Yeah. It's quite addictive, isn't it, when people are constantly giving you new takes on the human brain like that and new ways of being a human. It's quite
compelling.
He's
really good on drugs.
What do you mean he's good on drugs?
No, let me rephrase that.
You should see him
he's
at a
really
festival.
Good on the subject of drugs, and alcohol is a drug, so obviously he knows a lot about that.
What's his sort of headline take, please?
He thinks we'd be better off with safety kite mark MDMA than alcohol, because alcohol's quite bad for you and other drugs are not so bad for you, but they're not regulated. Mm-hmm. But if they were regulated, we'd do better.
Interesting. Okay, good. Thank you. Enjoyed that.
But, you know, that's my take on David Nutt. Mm-hmm. I might have got it wrong, but I think that's his take.
And let's not forget, David Nutt, very good on drugs. Joyce Carol Oates, Lovely Duck Deep. Going for some audiobooks here. Love an audiobook.
Yeah, I'm going through an audiobook stage here because I'm probably driving a lot, and so I need audiobooks in the car.
So good.
You can drive for bloody miles with an audiobook.
I know. And yet, even as we approach lockdown, with nowhere to go, you could still just drive around listening to audiobooks. Oh, Marianne Keyes, Grown Ups. I've read that and I love it. She's fantastic.
I love that book. Absolutely love it. Loved it. It was like a soap opera.
Yes,
wasn't it?
Yes.
It's just like a really good soap opera.
I missed them. One of those books that ended and I missed all the characters.
Yeah, you just
instantly.
I want season two.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
Write season two, Marianne Keyes, please.
She totally will. All right, very good. Let's jump into the middle of 2020 and see what you're up to in lockdown. So go for number, 11. Why not? Let's see where you are. Halfway through lockdown. We're in June now. Lovely. Oh, look, some plants. Very good for mental health.
You know what? I bought plants on Amazon and they arrived in sort of boxes and paper bags and they're absolutely brilliant and they're fine and they're thriving in the back garden. Really great.
Amazon do well at random things like that. They think it through before they do it.
And look at this now. I'm buying chocolate and candles.
Oh, nice. So June.
This is very lockdown, isn't it?
This is very, very lockdown, but not for yourself. You're buying them for other people, helping other people along.
You're right.
Just keep scrolling down. Neil's Yard Remedies.
What happened to the woman that read? What happened to her?
Where did she go?
She's just buying soap now.
She's buying soap.
More fire glow.
Also, who buys fire logs in June? Like, it was quite warm. Do you like a fire in summer?
These fire logs, when you've had a barbecue, you can just throw one on afterwards and then you've got flames to sit around.
Oh, that's lovely.
I know.
15, fire glow, the instant lighting fire log. There you are, I remember that one. Hairdressing scissors, cutting one's own hair in May 2020.
Don't you remember the hairdressers were shut?
I have a vague recollection. Yes.
I had to cut my own hair.
Yes. Quite nerve-wracking.
Look at that fringe.
Well, I know when you've got a distinctive fringe, when you've got, you know, you're...
I mean, it's either buying those scissors or not being able to see out. I had to go with the kitchen scissors and it sort of bent them round. So I thought, no, I'll buy some proper sharp scissors.
But fringes are terrifying to cut. Because if you just go a little bit too high, you're going to go higher and higher and higher, aren't you? It's quite a nerve-wracking thing to do.
Look, I'm buying drugs here. Yellow Yeow catnip bags. That's drugs for the cat.
Right, okay, good. It's the first thing we've seen you buying for the pet in your life. How many cats have you got? Just the one?
One.
Okay, very nice, very nice.
He's got his own Instagram account.
Oh yeah, which is completely unhacked.
Don't follow it. Don't.
What is it called? What's the account called?
Kevin Kitty Cat. Don't
Kevin
follow it.
Kevin Kitty Cat. I'm so following
it. It's basically just my house interiors and the cat.
Right, right.
Or where me and the cat go for walks outside. That's all it is.
What will be depressing is when you get more followers for that than you do for your actual proper account.
Kevin was more popular than my book, I think. Yeah.
Instagram is all about cats. Go to number 9 along the bottom. Let's just have
number 9.
Let's have a random look, shall we, and see what we've got in here.
Oh shit, I still haven't bought. What the fuck? Oh yeah, my shower attachment broke. That's the thing for the shower.
Good, good. Fixing the shower.
Still haven't fixed it. Oh, look, I've bought from the Oast House, the Alan Partridge podcast.
Amazing. Amazing.
The intellectual reading has gone right down,
yeah,
hasn't it?
Yeah, there's definitely a theme. And also, it's gone a bit weird here. 1st of September 2020.
Anatomical lungs cookie cutter.
So this is...
I can explain everything.
You're making lung biscuits, basically.
I volunteered for charity to go on Celebrity Bake Off for Stand Up to Cancer.
Ah.
So I thought, and my friend has got lung cancer, so I thought I'd make some lung biscuits.
Oh, wow.
But then I got the brief and lung biscuits weren't required. I had to make a laird biscuit, not a lung biscuit.
Got it. So this is the thing we never saw. We're seeing behind the scenes.
Never saw my lung biscuits, but of course I can make them for her anytime I like.
So that's
and she can shout at me, it's probably sugar that gave me cancer in the first place. Like a, my bad.
I'll eat them. I'll have them. All right. Lungs, cookie cutters. I mean, the stuff you can get on Amazon. Wonderful.
Oh, hello. Thank Christ.
There
we're
we are.
Still reading.
She's still
here
got a brain.
Go.
She's still got a brain. Go on.
This is wonderful. This is Towards the Psychology of Uncertainty, Trauma-Centered Psychoanalysis. And this is by Doris Brothers, who's a psychoanalyst in New York. And she's got some very good models of the brain that she's made up.
Right.
And she has things like, I can't remember what she calls them, but it's like fluid schema and fixed schema.
Mm.
And if you're not traumatized, you can be flexible. You can react to what's in front of you. But if you're traumatized, you get some rigid belief system. And these can go through the generations in transgenerational trauma.
Yeah.
So you can... So if you're traumatized, you're kind of a little bit like me, because I was traumatized by having my accounts hacked. So when you ask me for my Amazon password, I go, oh, no way are you getting my Amazon password.
Because you're
stuck.
Do you
see what I mean?
That's
a fixed,
frozen.
That's a fixed trauma because I'm too traumatized by what happened to me in the last week at the moment to be really flexible and see, like, Tom's probably not going to order fire logs for himself off my Amazon account.
Bloody well, actually. Fire logs look great.
Yeah, he's probably going to use his own Amazon account to buy those. But, you know, he's probably a trustworthy person because he's a public figure and I could humiliate him greatly if he stole anything from my Amazon account.
You could.
So I could probably trust you.
Yes.
But I'm in that fixed trauma schema thing with my brain at the moment. Like, I'm really rigid. I'm not fluid. I'm not flexible on my things. Now, this is a very small example. Imagine if you're really badly let down by people. Say you're 4 years old and you're really flexible and you go with the flow and then your parents die on you. Then you might get some really fixed schema that lasts you for life because of that trauma is so difficult to get over.
Yes. Well, this is, I've read about this because my dad died when I was 13.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's pretty traumatic.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? That's the one of the worst ages, like between 7 and 13, or apparently I read this years ago. But this idea of being stuck, you get stuck at that age and it, that just rings very, very true. Very, very true indeed. You stay that person for a long time.
Yeah, a part of you, you know, we talked about dissociative identity disorder earlier. Mm. Well, that goes in graduations. You might not just go flip into your 13-year-old self and not realise that you're whatever the age you are. You still own the adult that you are and who you are. But under certain circumstances, I wouldn't be surprised if you flipped or gradually went into being the 13-year-old boy.
Yeah. I'm not doing that.
I don't know. I don't know what a 13-year-old boy, as a 13-year-old boy, was like.
Yes.
But when I was, four, my nanny, who used to look after me, that's not my granny, that's the paid help nanny type nanny, didn't work for us anymore. I'm not quite sure why not and how that happened or what happened, but there's a part of me that was very traumatized by that, and there's a part of me that can revert to being four. But the circumstances for me reverting to be four are not traumatic. They're when everything's really easygoing and fun and I'm with people I love and trust. Then the four-year-old comes out.
Interesting.
So very playful four-year-old's got a different voice.
Wow.
It's quite bossy.
But when did you clock that it's when you're happy that, because one would assume it's when things are tough that you revert to the 13 or 5-year-old.
No,
or whatever,
I revert when I'm happy, because I revert before she's left, before the trauma came, I find that person again.
Yeah. Gosh.
And so it's like when I'm really relaxed and happy. And I've had 30 years of psychoanalysis, and my task is always to try to integrate the playful, demanding, entitled four-year-old into me.
Yes.
The 63-year-old. I'm working on it. It's coming along quite well.
We're all doing it. We're all an ongoing project.
Ongoing project. Anyway, so there we go. If you want to learn more about how not to be certain, because the fixed schemas are certainty, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, when you go, I'm not going to give anyone my password, that is a fixed schema. That's certainty. I'm certain it's wrong. I'm certain he's bad, she's good, that sort of thing. These really rigid belief systems.
Yeah.
She is trying to get us all to be flexible again. So that's why we've got Toward a Psychology of Uncertainty. Thank you, Doris Brothers. Very good book. It's quite academic. Well, but it's not an easy read.
But you've done what Philippa Perry does. You've given us a beautiful headline description of it. Perfect. I really get it. And that's absolutely fascinating. I can add that to my list of COD psychology things to bring up in conversation now.
It's probably best if you read the book before you do that.
Right. So here's what we're going to do, Philippa. We're running out of time. You've got to go and look after siblings. I've got to go to a really boring meeting, which is going to be quite a come down after this. What I'd love you to do is go to the last order, your latest order that you've done on Amazon. Okay. Just to
complete. On that. So, 20.
Yeah, last 30 21. Days at the top.
Last 30 days.
Yeah. So to complete the Philippa Perry journey. And I mean, look, you can choose one that best sums you up if you like, or we can be honest and go for that one, which is sitting there on the 12th of May.
Okay. What have I bought? I bought a Kindle book.
Yep.
Never Kiss a Man in a Canoe, Words of Wisdom from the Golden Age of Agony Aunts.
Why?
Now, because in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to record 5 episodes of Countdown in Dictionary Corner.
Oh my word.
And I thought they'd need some agony aunt anecdotes.
Great.
So I've bought this book to remind myself of those.
Of the good agony aunt anecdotes. So how do you find it when you end up doing these like Dictionary Corner? Have you done that before? Or is this the first time?
I think what happened when I did Grayson's Art Club, there was a celebrity booker that booked the celebrities that we had with us.
Yeah.
And she liked the look of me, and she put me on Celebrity Bake Off, and ever since I've had I was asked to do Celebrity Masterman. I said, oh no thank you, as you've realised from my reading, I'm a bit of a one trick pony. It's not on psychology, I'm absolutely fucking lost. Don't ask me about cricket, no. And but I've been asked to do some lovely things. I'm going to do Would I Lie to You, I'm going to do what else am I going to do, Countdown, and Richard Osman's House of Games.
This is so dreamy. Perfect.
So I love parties, and I think all these things are a bit like all we've got for parties at the moment. I mean, I love watching them. Whether I like being on them is another matter.
Well, we'll find out. And when we're watching you on those TV shows, if we see you start to behave like a four-year-old, we'll know you're happy. See?
Yeah, I'm hoping she doesn't come out. Might be a bit embarrassing, because you really think, what? When she does it, if you don't know her.
Yeah.
But she usually only comes out with people she knows, so
Okay, fine. All right. Let's go for this.
Look, real logs. Sometimes we've got real firewood. Look at that.
I think this is a perfect final item to end on, Philippa. We can leave you with your kiln-dried hardwood fire logs. 30 kilograms of them for £30. That's about a pound a kilogram.
It's a very expensive way of buying wood.
It really is. really is.
My time is very expensive.
Exactly. Philippa Perry, thank you so much for joining me on My Mate Bought a Toaster.
Oh, it's been so much fun. What a great idea for a podcast.
Thank you. All right, Philippa, I'll let you go. Have a lovely day. Thank you, thank you, thank you,
right.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you for having me on. It's been really good fun.
You're such a star. Thank you. That was brilliant.
Bye.
Bye, bye, bye. Philippa Perry there on My Mate Bought a Toaster. Oh, I need to go for a lie down. As long as I love you, I'm thinking of you. When I'm without you, I think about you. Please don't believe me, don't deceive me. Why do we have to part? I can't be the same always. I can't be the same always. GreatBigOwl.com.
Hello, it's Mr. P here.
I'm the other Mr. P.
And we are the hosts of Two Mr. P's in a Podcast.
The educational podcast where you don't actually learn a thing.
No, instead we explore the weird, wonderful and downright hilarious things that happen in school from people actually doing the job. We reminisce on our own time at school, funny things we experience each day. And of course, we share your hilarious stories from the chalk face. So if you work in a school or just want a nostalgic trip down memory lane, sit up straight, fingers on lips, and get ready for the lesson.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear, and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.